not manifesting this. I'm not attracting this. This is just hard. Some things are just hard. So through it, what I'm doing is loving myself and being gentle with myself. I'm not beating myself. I'm not being like, why is this happening to me? I'm being like, damn. All right. Well, if this is happening, I really need to use my tools so I could get through. This will not last forever. I won't feel this shitty forever. This won't be this hard forever. But while it is, how can I be as kind as possible to myself?
Hey there, I'm Laura Banky, an expectation-busting coach, speaker, writer, and storyteller. And I have a question for you. Are you ready to get real? Are you ready for real conversations with real women about real lives that defy traditional norms? Well, then you're in the right place. I spent 16 years in television as a sports anchor and reporter. That was 16 years of trying to look and be perfect. 16 years of hiding what my life was really like, the ups and downs, the unmet expectations, the things I thought I should be doing by a certain age. But I discovered that when we give ourselves permission to tell our stories, we help other women to do the same. We shine a spotlight on each other. So this is where we share our truths. This is where women from all different perspectives, paths, and backgrounds gather to redefine what it means to be a happy and successful woman right now. There's the life you thought you would have, and then there's your life actually. This is where we celebrate the actually. This is the Life Actually podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome. You are listening to the Life Actually podcast, and I am your host, Laura Banky. This is episode number 41. I'm so excited to have you with us for another great conversation. And once again, though, I have to start out, apologies for this scratchy voice. No, I'm not sick. It's just one of my super weird pregnancy symptoms that has not let up. I still lose my voice to some degree every single day. So just bear with me. As for today's conversation, let's not waste any time and jump right in. Today's guest is not messing around when it comes to telling it like it is, which makes her absolutely perfect for this podcast. Elizabeth D'Alto is an embodiment specialist, mystic, and spiritual guide who is known for her raw, honest, and grounded approach to self-help and spirituality. And she provides all-around incredible support to women in their own personal and unique journeys toward embodied healing and self-liberation. Like so many of us, Elizabeth thought her life would head in one direction. But after finding herself burned out at just 25 years old, she knew she was meant for more than just earning a paycheck. That realization eventually led her to create the Wild Soul Movement as she founded the Institute for Embodied Living and began the Embodied Podcast in 2015. In our conversation, Elizabeth gets real about her professional journey and also her personal experiences. A serial monogamist who has not found her longtime partner, she also talks about having to learn to date. Oh, and then having to learn to date in a pandemic. There is no one path to happiness or spiritual enlightenment, just like there's no one way to drive your business or professional career, or to date and find your person. But it all starts with discovering ways to love yourself and your life. This is Elizabeth's story. Elizabeth, welcome to the Life Actually podcast. Really, really happy that you are here, taking the time to sit down with us, share some of your story, and I can't wait to dive in. So thank you for being here.
Thank you. So much fun to be on this side of the interview sometimes.
Yeah, right. I mean, you have your own very successful podcast, so you know how all this works. It's kind of nice to not have to take the reins. You just get to talk.
It's awesome.
Well, I love how I get connected with the guests that come on this show. And I first heard about you and all of this incredible work that you are doing through a mutual acquaintance that we have in a women's group that I'm in called Dear Grown Ass Women for Women 35 and Up. Plugging that one. If anyone is interested, I can always tell you more about it. It's great. But anyway, a woman said, oh my gosh, you have to go to this website. It was your website. And she said, you have to take this Wild Soul Archetype quiz. Elizabeth is amazing and you can thank me later. And I did. And I was like, okay, this is so cool.
I'm so glad. What were your archetypes?
Oh gosh, I should, I'm going to need to pull up the email to remember exactly what they were.
Don't worry about it. If you don't remember off the top of your head, no biggie.
I don't, but it made sense. I do remember that it totally made sense. I was like, oh, okay. Okay, cool. And I also like how you explained all of the archetypes and how we actually have a little bit of a piece of ourselves in each zone.
Yes, 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 yes.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and kind of guess that maybe when you were first becoming an adult, when you were first, you know, going through school, whatever it was, as you were stepping out into the world on your own, did you even know that this type of work, that this type of life that you're currently leading was possible?
No. I actually think about that all the time, how hilarious it is. Like if you would have told me, hey, there's this thing that you could do, I would have been like, what the fuck? Sorry, can I curse on your show?
Go for it. Swear.
What the fuck are you talking about? Because it wasn't. Like, there was no social media. Like, when I was in, like, high school, college, Facebook came out my senior year of college.
Okay.
So, no. I had, like, no context for any of this.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And yet, we hold ourselves so often to this idea of a plan, of the way we think our life is supposed to go. And then it never works, and yet we still feel beholden to these plans. So did you have a plan when you were in college, when you were graduating? Like, was there a plan?
There was, because have you ever heard of Cutco knives?
Oh my gosh, my dad used to sell those.
No way. Okay.
Yes.
Was he, like, he ran an office, or he was just a rep? Like, how
he was
he...
just a rep. Yeah, he did it in college.
Yeah. So I did it in college. I was really successful. And then I went through the management training. And when I graduated college, I was running my own district office. I was recruiting and training sales reps for Cutco.
And oh, so, wow.
Even though you're working for a company, like, you're technically, you're an independent contractor, you're doing your own thing, you're recruiting your own people, paying for your office, hiring and training your receptionist, your staff and all that stuff, responsible for all the advertising and all these things. So yeah, like, my plan was, I'm going to be a millionaire by the time I'm 30, and I'm just going to, like, run the shit out of this office. I'll be a division manager someday. Like, I just thought I was going to do the Cutco thing forever.
Oh, wow. So how did you happen upon the Cutco thing? Because I was it like, I'm going to sell knives, you know, was that something that you were telling yourself?
Actually, you know, it's funny. So, I had set up an interview. I was a no-show to an interview the summer before college. And then the summer between my freshman and sophomore year of college, I saw the ad again in the newspaper, and I went for the interview. And I was like, oh, this seems interesting. And then I literally, that summer, I was 19 years old, I was the number 10 representative in the United States of America out of, like, 20,000 reps. Like, part of the pitch to get people to, like, see you is, you know, I'm in the running, I could win a scholarship, you know, and, like, I think, like, 100 people win the scholarship a summer. So, you know, thousands and thousands of reps are saying that, and they're not in the running. But, like, for real, the whole summer, I was, like, printing out the stats and be like, hey, you know, see, I'm number 6 in the company right now. Like, I could really win this thing.
So, oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah, it really was.
Okay, what made you so good at selling knives?
You know what it is? I just really took to the – you get out what you put in, and you have to get through a lot of no's to get to yeses. So it really was just – law of averages. I'm like, oh, so if I just do more appointments, I will make more sales. That's all it was. Because the products really actually are amazing. Like, I still have, like, I have my Cutco from literally almost 20 years ago that I'm still using. I've sent it back to be sharpened, like, once. It's an amazing product. And really all you're doing is, like, showing people, here's how my knives work versus here's how your knives work. You're, like, cutting up shit in their kitchens. It's super fun. Like, I've always been, like, pretty outgoing. And so I was like, cool. The product is the bomb. I believe in this. I see the value. I just need to see more people. So that was it. I just did a ton of appointments. I was not, like, afraid of rejection. And it was literally just a numbers game.
Yeah. Okay. Not being afraid of rejection. Where did that come from? Especially at a young age. I know, I mean, I still battle fear of rejection, but certainly when I was younger, it was like, that was kind of a paralyzing thing for me.
So what's fascinating is, I don't know, are you into astrology at all?
Not I'm getting a little bit more, but the short answer is no. I don't really know much about it.
What's interesting is I have a vivid memory of being, like, about 5 or 6 years old, and I'm in the car and I'm in the back seat and my parents are in the front and my mom is talking about, like, something, but in this story, she's like, you know, I decided not to take it personally. And she turns around and looks at me. And again, I'm like 5 or 6. And she says, I learned that from you. And I just remember being so shocked because it made no sense to me as a young child that my parent would learn something from me. But the answer is I really just have always been this way. And Now that I'm into astrology, for anyone who is into astrology, my moon is in Capricorn, which is apparently one of the reasons why a lot of stuff just rolls off my back that really bothers other people.
I love it. Oh my gosh, I love it. I wish I had just a tiny bit more of that in me, or a lot more, but I would take even a tiny, tiny bit more. Okay, so you were going to be a millionaire by 30. That was the plan.
That was the plan.
How was the plan? Did you have plans for your personal life too? Did you have an idea of how you thought that was supposed to go?
No. You know what's so fascinating? Because now I just turned 38 years old at the time of recording this. And I had been in relationships and I kind of just assumed, I had never questioned like relationship, whether or not I would have a family. It was just kind of like a thing people do. But I always wanted like a partner. I always saw myself like getting married. I never was a person who like thought about being a mother. Mm-hmm. And then as I went through more relationships into my 20s and into my 30s, I was like, oh, I don't have to have kids if I don't want to. And guess what? I don't really want to. So I was always much more like career driven or like purpose driven than I was towards having a family or anything like that. It was like having a family was something that I just assumed I would do because again, it was just like you follow these steps and this is what comes next.
Yeah.
But then at a certain point, when I left Cutco, I worked in corporate America for like a year. I sold uniforms for a company called Cintas. So I was literally like selling uniforms to high-end hotels and like Broadway theaters in New York City. And then I became a personal trainer. And then from there, I eventually found like the online marketing world and started an online fitness business, which then developed into more like healing and embodiment work, like what I do now. But I was always so much more interested in and compelled and literally like pulled and called into like career, like vocational things.
Yeah. That's so interesting. As a person who was I won't say the opposite because I did. I strived very much in my career. That was very important to me. Yet, always this idea of you have to be in a relationship, you have to get married, you have to have kids. That was always so strongly tugging at the back of my mind or the front of my mind or my entire mind, it felt at some points. Where do you think that came from? For me, so much of it, of my beliefs came from how I grew up. Like every adult I saw was married with kids. Like that's just was so, so normal. Where do you think your striving for the more business side of things came from?
You know, it's funny because I love my parents and they're wonderful people. And, you know, a lot of our parents, they have their dysfunctions because they didn't really have great role models. And so, from the time I was young, I want to say like early teens, I was basically like looking at the people in my family being like, well, I don't want to do that. Mm. And I remember even calling it, like, I made up a word for it. I'm like, these are the anti-examples of my life. So I was always also so oriented towards freedom. Like I remember just two monumental things in my life was learning how to read. Once I could read, I became a voracious reader as a child. Like I was always like summer reading lists. I was like, bring it on. Give me all the books. Right. Because I just felt like, oh, I could know anything.
Yeah.
If I can read, I have access. I could learn anything. And I loved reading and storytelling and things like that. And then when I learned how to drive, once I got my driver's license, I was like, cool, now I can go anywhere. So I've always really been pretty independent and oriented towards freedom and really being able to do whatever I wanted to do. And some of that comes from like a rebellion, like against authority, because, you know, my family is super codependent. And some of them are very controlling. So wanting to just be in charge of my own life, like when it was time to go to college, I was like, I'm certainly going away. I didn't go too far, but I was like, I'm out. Like the minute I could be out, I'm out, you know? And I never moved back. I never lived with my parents again after college, except for in summers. And I never lived like near them again either. Like the closest I lived, they were in Pennsylvania now. I was in New York City, which was still like an hour and a half, 2 hours away.
Yeah.
And now I only will live a flight away.
Okay.
Like, I don't want to live within driving distance of my family. And they know that. I tell them that. And like, they would love to have me close by. And I'm like, nope, not for me. So, yeah, there's just like this drive for like agency, sovereignty, freedom to be able to do whatever I want to do. But also, and even with the Cutco job, like when we were recruiting and training sales reps, I mean, I joke, I always say like knives for lives, because so many of the skills that have made me good at my business, I got friggin' selling Cutco.
Yeah.
Like running those interviews. Even now I do like teacher training and facilitator training and some of my own methods. And, you know, I've been training people since I was 20 years old. You know that saying, like, if a mastery comes with 10,000 hours of practice in something, I'm like, if there's anything I have 10,000 hours in, it's public speaking, standing up in front of groups of people, teaching classes. Even when I was a personal trainer, I was teaching fitness classes. I was doing private client one-on-one sessions. So literally, like, the teaching, coaching, facilitating, I've just been doing it for, you know, almost 20 years now. So, and I love helping people. And even the selling knives, right? I really saw the value of, you know, a lot of my customers, of course, were housewives, and it really does save time to have a good set of knives. Like if you're cooking dinner for your family every night,
yeah,
it's the difference between breezing through that and like really wasting a lot of friggin' time and frustration, you know? So, I enjoy helping people so much. I was never really wired to not. Like that year I spent in corporate America was like kind of torture for me, because I'm like, what are these uniforms doing for people? Mm. For a lot of people, it was like, oh, this is the shitty uniform I have to wear to go to this job I hate, you know, to work in like the housekeeping department at a hotel. So that was really like demoralizing. I didn't enjoy that. And then when I went into personal training, I'm like, okay, here we go. Now I'm back doing something that at least benefits people in some way.
Yeah. Well, how long were you at Cutco?
2002 to 2007. So about 5 years.
Okay. So if the plan had been when you were in college, I'm going to do this, I'm going to be a millionaire by 30. where did that start to diverge? Because you weren't there. You weren't 30 and still at Cutco.
No, I was not. I think it was about 25 when I left. So it diverged there, because what was happening is I was running the Washington, D.C. district, which basically was not a district that anyone had really done well in. And they pretty much sent me there because they were like, well, if anyone's going to make this work, it's going to be her. And it didn't, and I couldn't. And so I burned myself out within 2 years, 2.5 years of running the district in Washington, D.C. And then I moved back up. I moved to Hoboken, New Jersey after that. And that's where I got a job. Because at that point I was like, I don't want to be my own boss anymore. I want a boss. I don't want to have to make the decisions. I was like burnt out and quite jaded on like having all that responsibility. Because literally imagine like coming right out of college, I was already like renting commercial office space, recruiting. I was literally doing my own thing.
That's crazy.
It was. And it was, again, epic experience, but it was hard, you know? And there were so many things that I was learning in the field, right? Like I was not good with money. That was one of the things.
Okay.
And so that was really hard for me. So I was making all this money, but I think when I was like 22 or 23 years old, my 1099 that year was $151,000.
Wow.
And I had no, like, I looked at my bank account and I was like, where is it? Like, what the hell? So, and like taxes would roll around and I'd be like, where is this money supposed to be coming from? So like that was hard for me. And then, so when I moved back up to New York, I was like, let me just get a sales job. Let me just like, I'm good at sales. Let me make easy money and whatever. But kind of like what we were just talking about, I just couldn't do something that doesn't help people. It was just not fulfilling. And it's so funny because for a lot of my life, I've joked, like, I remember my mom saying to me once, she's like, what would you ever do if you had to get a regular job? And I'm like, we're never going to have to know, because I'm just not. Even in 2014, before I launched like the current iteration of my business, I went and I got a job for a second because I ran out of money.
Hey, right? Got to pay the bills.
Real talk, entrepreneurship life. I literally ran out of money. So I went and I got a job. And then what, I was going to be selling yacht cruises in Marina Del Rey in Los Angeles. And I was like, listen, I can sell anything. And it was so funny. It really was hysterical. Like the interview process was a joke. Like I knew it. I knew when I walked in that I would get the job. And then I remember the first week they were like, okay, so here's the schedule and this, this, and this. And I was like, oh, but I have to go to this training, this certification training on that weekend. And they're like, well, you can't go. And I was like, excuse me? I just was literally...
You can't tell me what to do. I was
like, what do you mean I can't go? And then, you know, a miraculous thing happened where a chunk of money that I needed found its way to me. And I quit that job before I even started.
Wow.
It was just so, I was like, I'm really not cut out to have to do anything. I'm not like literally driven by my soul to do.
Well, one of the things I really like in what you just shared about, I don't like that you burned out by age 25 at the Cutco job, but I think, you know, being honest about, you know, I didn't know how to deal with money. I was not prepared for all of that. Like, I feel like so many of us have this idea when we graduate from college that we're supposed to now have it all figured out and we are supposed to become successful overnight.
Totally.
Well, that's not real. Like, we don't have enough life experiences to really know what's going on. Like, it is all of that helped you get to where you are now. And all of what you're doing now is going to help wherever you end up in the future. And we just have this narrow view of, if I'm not a millionaire by 30, then what the hell am I doing with my life?
Right. Which is like ridiculous too, when you think about it, like how much money that is. And especially in like the online world where people throw around like making seven figures, like it should just be some normal thing. Oh, it's a very big deal. It's a much bigger deal than people let it be. And you know, I think about that in the context, I'm not a mother. One of the reasons I love not being a mother is so I can mother my mothers. You know, I have so many clients who are moms and, you know, they take care of everybody else. So I'm like, you need someone to take care of you. And it's the same with motherhood. Like, people just assume the baby arrives and this woman is going to know how to be its mother.
Yep.
Which is wild, because for a first time mother, what the hell? There's no instruction manual.
Nope. The hospital sends you home with a baby and that's it. Nothing else.
Yeah. And, you know, some people are lucky they've had like younger siblings or whatever, or they've had exposure to kids for whatever reason. But it's really, just like the job thing. Like, somehow you're expected to just know how to be a functioning adult who has their shit together.
It just doesn't work that way. Did you learn something from that burnout experience? Like, did you learn like what your limits were and what would be a healthier way to go forward? Or were you still too young to even really process that?
I think a little bit of both. So what I did know was, one of the things I disliked about that job, but then, you know, I went and I repeated it quite a bit in personal training and group fitness, was you had to work on the weekends.
Yeah.
We ran training every Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then when I became a personal trainer, it was like, okay, you're working in the mornings and in the evenings mostly. And often it's the daytime that's pretty open. And then, you know, a lot of clients, you could see clients on the weekends. So just noticing how my life was oriented around being busy when I wanted to be living, not working.
Yeah.
And so when I shifted into running my own business outside of having to show up for personal training clients and group classes and stuff like that, then that finally, which this was now in my later 20s, became a priority of being like, I need to leave room to have a life.
Oh, that is so important, right? And especially when we have all these messages of you have to be successful, you have to be making $1 million. Other people on Instagram, if I see another reel from a 25-year-old talking about how nobody said they could do it and now they're a millionaire, I'm going to punch them. It's like, come on, what message are we sending?
I know. And listen, like, for some people, that's their path. And I'm like, great.
Cool.
Personally, cool. I'm like really into sufficiency and sustainability, which to some people might sound super boring, but for me, it's so sexy. It's like, what's enough?
Yeah.
What's like good enough for like, what do I only actually need? Because again, what's also interesting in this whole entrepreneur world is that people are like, oh, well, just you can make more money. And if you can, you should.
Yes.
I'm like, really?
Oh, yes.
Because like, you should be growing every year. And I'm like, well, what if I just figure out how to make what I need to make and then build my life around that?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
What's enough? What do I actually need? And not just for me, right? But what do I need to be able to like thrive and take amazing care of myself, be generous, be there for people who might need something here and there? That's what I care about.
Do you sense when that kind of shift happened for you? Is there a moment where that started to be something that resonated more with you?
Yeah, the year 2017 was a year I really started to divest from these entrepreneur communities that I'd become a part of, where that like grow, 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 bigger is better, more, 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 scale, scale, scale. I was like, I don't want, I'm a mystic. My work is like deep and spiritual. We're working with the sacred body here. I'm not doing this extract as much human potential as possible from the vessel. I want to be an instrument for the divine, for grace, for collective healing and liberation. I don't need to scale that. I just need to listen and pray and take my directives from my soul and then carry those out, not follow this agenda of, you know, life hackers.
Yeah. When did you, so you were a personal trainer for a while. When did it start to become clear to you that the idea of embodied living, the spiritual guidance, all of this, when did this become an idea like, hey, wait, I could maybe do something with this?
It was certainly more of a calling that evolved very organically. So I became a personal trainer in 2008. And then in 2011, 2012, first I became friends with someone and then eventually ended up dating him, who he was a Reiki master and his mom and his sister were Reiki masters. And he bridged me into this world of energy work and energy healing, which I had never heard of before. And what I started to realize, because I'd been into self-help and personal development since back in my Cutco days, because salespeople love that shit, right?
Oh, yeah.
but it's usually more oriented towards like the power of positive thinking and Tony Robbins and stuff like that, or Landmark Forum. God, I remember when everyone I knew was going through Landmark Forum and trying to get me to go, but I never went. And but they were calling me, telling me about their rackets and their stories and like all the jargon. So funny. Which, listen, some people really get a lot out of that. It just was not my jam. But so I went beyond like the personal development and like the pop psychology stuff and really started getting into like the intersection, the integration of mind, body, soul. And the energy work really opened that up for me. Like specifically the summer of 2012 when I got my second Reiki attunement. I remember I was in Manhattan and I walked out of that building and I just felt distinctly different. And I'd always been sensitive, empathic, and intuitive, but I didn't really have context for just how much I was out in the world picking up that wasn't being like offered or presented.
Mm.
And so starting to work with all of that and refine that, because I had also noticed, even as a personal trainer, the last place where I worked was a boutique studio in New York City. And the guy who owned it was like very meticulous about programming and stuff like that. And I was always just so much more intuitive. And my clients were coming to get loved up on. They got good results, but you know, clients ranging from their 20s all the way up into their 50s would just be coming, like pouring their hearts out to me in my session. I was like, I felt like a therapist.
Yeah.
And then I remember I was at a conference and I heard, I think it was Danielle Laporte speak when she was, you know, back before Desire Map was a thing and it was still Firestarter Sessions was something that she was doing. And I'm not into her work anymore, but back then it was quite pivotal for me. And she said, like, what are things that you notice that people come to you for? Or what are things that people tell you you're really good at that you just, it kind of surprises you that you didn't even realize you're doing anything because it comes so naturally to you. And it was that. It was like people opening up to me, people telling me things they never told anyone else before. Even I would notice when I travel, no matter where I am in the world, literally, I could be in Europe and I'm not even from there. I don't speak the language and people are coming up to me asking me for directions. It's just such an interesting something I started to notice about being like a healer, guide, facilitator, that I was really built to do work like that in a much deeper way.
Yeah. Well, it was one thing to be, you know, you were essentially running a business while you were selling Cutco knives, but that was still through somebody else's organization. I'm sure there were kind of guidelines and things you had to follow along.
Yes, yes, yes.
The idea of like fully doing something from scratch that was your own, no matter how passionate you are about it, is a whole different world. So what was the transition like for you to even think I can do this to then actually starting it?
Well, the thing is, it just never even struck me that I couldn't do it.
Okay.
Because even as a personal trainer, you're making people's workout plans and programs.
Yeah.
You're creating things for people. You're evaluating and assessing people and then deciding what will work for them to help them hit a goal. And then I'm teaching exercise classes. So I'm making playlists. I'm creating the class. And I even created a few of my own classes. And then I was a Zumba instructor at one point. So again, like you're doing choreography. And actually, as you're asking me this, I'm realizing, wow, I've just literally always been creating things. Even at Cutco, when I would give talks at the weekly team meetings or give speeches, like I was literally week in and week out. You're right. There were like the formulaic things like the training program and the interview and stuff like that, that you were essentially following a script or a plan for. But then like weekly team meetings every single week, team night out every single week, division meetings once a month, regional conferences once a quarter. And you're like speaking and teaching and doing things at all and having to like create stuff from scratch. So I really had just always been doing that.
Yeah.
So now it was just a new context.
What I love about this is, you know, our path and our plan and it evolves so much, and where we end up can evolve so much, and we end up doing things that we never thought we would be doing. But there's so often there are common things or things that were so important in a part of our life or a part of our career that we might look back on and be like, oh God, I can't believe I did that. That's not as fulfilling as what I'm doing now. But the skills that we've been developing over that time, and then to actually see how they can play out in a way that speaks to us is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So did you have clients built in from the personal training days, or how did you even begin to cultivate this community that you have now?
No. So I started in, do you know who Marie Forleo is?
Oh, yes.
I started in the Marie Forleo world. So okay. I had gone to one of her events, RHH Live, in 2010. And I did her mastermind in 2011. And so that was my indoctrination into all of this stuff.
Okay. Also the indoctrination into scale, 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 make more money, keep growing.
Yeah, that world for sure.
That's a tough world of entrepreneurship, because like with the work that you do, and I feel the work I do too, it doesn't always, and you've spoken to this, you know, it does not mesh all the time.
No. Yeah. And you know, it was fascinating. I would find myself in rooms with very successful people, because I ended up dating someone who's like quite a big name in that world now, back in the day when he was still building things. And so I would be in rooms with these people. Again, like there's quite a few names of people who everyone would probably recognize if they're in that space, who I was like in masterminds with them, like peer masterminds. We were friends.
Yeah.
And so I'd be sitting there with like all these people who are making like high six figures, if not multiple seven figures. And here I am with my little like online fitness business, barely cracking six figures, and people being like, you should do this, you should do this. And I just didn't like want to do any of it. So much of it felt like douchey or gross to me, or I would try things and they wouldn't work for me. That happened a lot early on. I would try things and they wouldn't work for me. And I'm like, I just don't think this is my way. And it actually, when the idea came in for Wild Soul Movement, in 2013, that was September of 2013. And then a month later, I was in Los Angeles, and I was there when Marianne Williamson announced that she was going to be running for Congress.
Okay.
And when she did that, she told the story of David and Goliath, which I know a lot of people are just familiar with that story from the Bible. But if anyone listening doesn't have context for that, essentially David, this little guy, had to fight this big ass giant warrior dude, Goliath. And all the warriors, all the fighters were trying to like train him up, use this weapon, use this thing, do this thing. Here's the strategy. And David was just like, no, if I'm going to do this, I got to do it my way. And he walked into, you know, the ring or the stadium or whatever the hell it was where they were meeting with a slingshot. And he took out the giant with a slingshot.
Yeah.
And Marianne Williamson was telling that story. And I remember like I was literally arriving in the same place. I had just spent like the better part of the last 2 years intensively, the last 3 years actually, intensively learning all this like online marketing, digital marketing strategy and all this stuff and da 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 da. And I realized in that moment, it was like, I had to learn the rules so I could break them. Like if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have to do it my own way.
That's really powerful to come to that conclusion. And especially like people who are involved in the entrepreneurial and online business world understand this. If you're not a part of it, like it's it's a strange little, like,
it's so weird.
Yes, it is. And there are so many people who have now built their business based on telling you how to continue to build yours. And there is this idea that there's like this one size fits all way to go, which anyone who, and I talk about this a lot too, anyone who's dating or who is single, there are so many similar rules in that world too. Like just this idea that there is one way to accomplish anything. My God. And don't worry, I'll tell you. You pay me, and I'll tell you the steps, and then you can get there too. And it's exhausting.
Yeah, it's so exhausting. And listen, this is one of the reasons why I love things like astrology. There's another system called Human Design that I really like because I'm a really big advocate. I have a self-love framework, and there's five parts to it, which are self-awareness, self-knowledge, self-acceptance, self-trust, and self-respect. And the reason for that is if you're going to really love yourself, you got to be aware of yourself. You got to know who you are and how you're built. Yeah. And when you look at who you are and how you're built, you're better able to discern, okay, this is going to work for me. This is never going to work for me. Based on how I'm built, there's just some stuff that's never going to work for me. Ever. Doesn't matter. It could be the greatest strategy. It could work like gangbusters for other people. It's never going to work for me. And so rather than making that about me, right? So I was hip to this early on when something wouldn't work for me. Instead of being like, what's wrong with me? I'd be like, cool, not the approach for me. Next.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people are like, why isn't this working? It works for da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But so often behind the scenes, there's so many things that so-and-so has going on that we don't know about that are contributing to why it works, you know?
Oh. Exactly. I mean, isn't this is kind of social media in general. We put out all of the great stuff, and yet we have absolutely no idea what's going on behind the scenes. Were you able to apply this type of mentality to what was going on in your personal life as well as you, you know, continue to be single and we're not getting married?
Yeah, I've been in relationships though. I mean, from basically 25 on, I was in long-term relationships. Like, hang on. I was in like four or five relationships pretty much back to back for almost like 11 years.
Okay.
Which was another learning for me, right? Like to realize that you can really like someone. It doesn't mean you have to get into a relationship with them.
Mm. Yeah. No, that's a big thing to have to learn. Oh.
I literally didn't realize that till I was like 33 years old, getting out of the first relationship where I ever lived with someone. And I was like, I didn't actually have to be with that person. So it's funny. So I've been single for the majority of the last 5 years. I got into a relationship last year for a little while, but I've mostly I've done a lot of dating. I had to learn how to date. Okay. There's a hilarious meme that I just posted the other day, actually, and people were dying, that was like, I don't know how to date. I know how to serious relationship and I know how to be a hoe. I don't know how to do the in between. And that was really true for me.
So true.
So like in 2018, I had to like venture into the world of like online dating and app dating. I'd never done it before. But because, you know, I have this big community of women and dating is a big struggle, I'm like, cool. I treated it like a social experiment. And I went on so many dates and it was hilarious. Actually, during that time, I also started doing stand-up comedy just for fun. For fun, because I needed an outlet, and honestly, the jokes write themselves when you're app dating in a city like Los Angeles. It was just so funny, and I'm not a great stand-up comedian. I'm not great at premises, punchlines, and stuff like that. But I'm an entertaining person, and I'm a good storyteller, and everyone can relate to online dating shit.
Oh,
so
God,
I did really well.
I love it. Well, you said you had to really learn how to date. So how did you do that for yourself? Because I think another really important thing is that everybody dates differently. There is no one way to do it.
Well, you know what's interesting? So I'm really oriented towards monogamy.
Yeah.
And so the idea of dating, and I for a chunk of time I had lived in San Diego, specifically North County San Diego, which does have a large population of non-monogamous or polyamorous people. And so I had that kind of influence, and I didn't really understand, like, you know, when you're dating, you could be seeing a handful of people at once. And it's not unethical to not be like disclosing to all of them that you're seeing other people because you're just feeling people out.
Yeah.
That's literally like it's dating, you know, like this person is not announcing to me what other dates they're going on this week or like who they're sleeping with or not or like what else is going on. So I was in this fascinating inquiry around what do I even want? Maybe I'm not built for partnership. Maybe I want a roster, not a partner. And I just kept feeling into, like, where does it hit my morals and my integrity, though? Because I'm such a transparent person and I love direct communication. And I guess this is also part of it. Again, being like very sensitive, intuitive, empathic, psychic, whatever the hell you want to call it. I know a lot of things that people are not telling me because I feel it, sense it, see it, hear it, whatever. So it's challenging for me to be in relationship with people when I'm essentially sensing all these kinds of things that are going on that are not being disclosed. And learning how to balance, how to bring that forward if it's necessary to know, or like how to hold it and not invade people's privacy if it's something they haven't offered. Like, that was a weird part of it for me too. And just being clear about what I wanted. Because there were times, even still now, like right now, I'm in a phase where, I mean, I would love to meet my partner. Like, at some point in my life, like, I believe that'll happen. But when I don't have real energy to put towards it, I'm totally fine to like either be on my own or just like have a lover or two, you know, because I do like affection. And again, for the astrology people, my Venus is in Leo. And one of the famous internet astrologers, Chandi Nicholas, describes that as you love, love, and adore adoring, which is real. And the other thing, you know, that was cool for me about dating and learning how to date, I really got to put into practice a lot of healing I had done about, you know, unhealthy attachment, enmeshment, codependency, all of these dysfunctional patterns that I just picked up in my family growing up.
Yeah.
So, and really one of my favorite people I've ever interviewed for my podcast was a man called Ken Page, and his book is Deeper Dating. And in that book, he talks about attractions of inspiration versus attractions of deprivation. And I really have been practicing that literally for like 3 years is noticing, because like chemistry and compatibility are different things. You know, so like that super hot, fiery chemistry is usually not going to result in a great relationship, you know? So
yeah,
learning to practice these kinds of things. And the same, like, there's so many parallels between dating and business, because like when you're hiring team or when you're going after an idea or something, like there's just ways for your own self to learn. And again, from a very much of an embodied perspective, which I've rooted this into my work big time, is, I mean, how do you feel before, during, and after something? You know, what's going on in your body? Are you nervous? Do you feel calm? Do you feel grounded? Is it making you anxious? Like, there's just all these sensory cues that really indicate to us what's going on and whether something is good for us and aligned for us or not. And so part of, for me, learning how to date was just learning how to apply my embodiment practices and my discernment that I am so used to using and everything else to that area, which for me personally is significantly more challenging.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Well, you did a workshop for single women. This was like a few months back that I'm not single, but I attended it because I want to see what you have to say. I'm so curious. And it was amazing. If you ever do this again, I want to encourage anyone who is single to definitely.
Oh, it's on the website. If people Yeah, I recorded it. People buy it all the time. It's untameyourself.com/workshops. And there's actually a part one, which was just like the general dating in your 30s and 40s. And then people specifically wanted an app dating.
Crash course.
So I ended up doing a part two as well.
Awesome. Go check this out. Anyone who is single, I highly recommend it. What you just said about like checking in with how are you feeling at various points. I mean, this is something that I work with some of my clients on is we spend so much time, or at least I know I did, worrying about, does he like me? Does this person, am I doing what this person needs me to be doing to make sure that this keeps going? When I rarely asked, how do I feel? And that's the only thing that matters.
The only thing that matters. You know what's something I also really learned to pay attention for is, what does this person bring out in me?
Oh, yeah.
Am I being my, like, literally, are they bringing out the best? And that was a big thing of that, to go back to that attractions of inspiration and attractions of deprivation. The attractions of deprivation are going to bring out the worst in you, right? And it's, you know, we all have these shadows. We all have these unconscious things. And so it's not about avoiding them, but it's also about cultivating the best stuff. Like, we want to be with people that bring out our best, who we also bring out their best.
Yes.
Right? Some people are just toxic combinations. I don't actually believe in toxic people. You know, people want to be like, he's toxic, she's toxic, they're toxic. I'm not into that. I believe in toxic behaviors.
Okay.
And toxic programming. And some people bring that out in us and some people don't. And yeah. So just paying attention for that. And also, you know, being discerning around, why am I even engaging in relationship? Am I here for growth? Am I here for pleasure? Am I here for companionship, support, partnership, to share the burdens of life? Like, what do I actually need or want out of a partnership, which again is a parallel in business, right? Because when we're figuring out if we need to hire a team, what kind of person, what kind of support do I need? What am I looking for help being able to do in my own business? All this stuff. So the parallels between those things continue to fascinate me. But I also noticed through different phases and stages of life, those things change. And it's no different. You're not the only person who is in a relationship that came to that dating workshop. One of my longtime clients was like, no, I came. And she was telling me how she was sharing a bunch of it with her wife and being like, wow, this is actually really good for us, for our connection, you know?
Totally, totally. And another thing that just stuck out to me in that workshop was also, you know, you talking about having somebody, a romantic interest, like come to your apartment or come to your space and not changing anything about it so that they'll like it. Like just being like, this is me, and not having to feel like we are. Because honestly, why? And I talk to my clients about this all the time. Why would you want someone to fall in love with a you that you've created that's not actually you? Then what, one day you either have to pretend to be that person the rest of your life, or one day you're like, surprise, guess what? I actually really am like this, not like this. What kind of a relationship is that?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. A couple months ago, I was reading an article that was saying just be yourself is bad dating advice.
Ugh.
And I'm like, that's fascinating. But the point the person was making, it was kind of a clickbait title. The point the person was making is that a lot of people don't know themselves.
Okay.
So I saw the angle there, but I'm like, this is exactly why my self-love framework is like, you need to know who you are.
Yes.
And then you need to show up with that so that people can take it or leave it quickly. You know, people are either going to be into it. You know, you're into Your Grown Ass Women. One of her t-shirts is, I'm not for everyone, right?
Yep, exactly.
It's exactly right. And I'd rather know. It's funny because dating, I treat app dating like a sales funnel in a business. It's like there's your lead generation, there's the people who opt in, there's the people who opt out, there's the people who become customers and they want to buy the thing. It's like the same freaking thing with dating.
It's so true. I have not heard it described that way, but oh my God, you nailed it.
It's literally how I would treat it. Because like, I don't know how some people leave their dating apps on all the time. I would go on for like literally a week or two at a time, do a ton of swiping, go on a bunch of dates, narrow it down to like two or three people I liked. Maybe narrow that down to one, or end up with nobody after a couple of months and be like, all right, I need another break again. And then I'll be ready to go back and do the whole thing over again.
Well, how did the pandemic affect dating for you? Just your personal life and your personal mindset.
Yeah, that was fascinating. So I went on my first date with the man I ended up dating for like the first I don't know, who the hell knows how long we've been in this shit now.
Seriously.
Like 4 or 5 months of the pandemic, like 2 days before lockdown. So we went on our first date. I remember it was Pi Day. That's the only reason I remember it, because it was 314. I remember 2 days later, LA was shutting down and he was like, hey, like, are you up for still hanging out during this? And we basically decided like, cool, well, we'll be in each other's bubble, because he lived really close by and whatever. And what's fascinating is, I've thought about this. I've zoomed out after that relationship ended and wondered if the world was open and we were going on dates that weren't house dates or weren't like beach walks and things like this, we got really close really fast because it was more intimate, because you're hanging out in people's houses immediately, right?
Yeah.
So there wasn't really like a courting phase. I wonder if I would have actually gotten into a deeper relationship with that person, you know? Mm-hmm. But it was nice. It was lovely to have a person, at least, to have like the physical connection and stuff like that in the beginning. And he also had a little baby and I loved the baby. And so that, I had never dated someone with a child before. And so that was a whole different experience, especially a little child. And his son was almost the same age as my niece, who I wasn't able to see. And so it was also like pretty nourishing to be able to have a little kid in my life, considering I was missing out on my niece's life. So, but then when I broke up with him and I moved up to the Bay, I didn't date for a while because I was like, oh, it's COVID. The other thing is, I'm great on my own.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I have to like force myself. I'm like, all right, I certainly don't want to be alone forever. So like I should go put some energy towards this because I'm just like, I'm great on my own. You know, I'm good doing my life. I don't mind being on my own. You know, there's certain things. It's not always super convenient to live by yourself, especially during a pandemic. But like, I love my life. I love myself. Things are good. You know, I have great friends in my life, a lot of connection, a lot of fulfillment through my work. But, you know, that is certainly something that I even hesitate to say is missing in my life, but I'll just go ahead and say is missing in my life, but something I would like to add to my life that actually feels better and more accurate. Yeah. But then it was kind of similar. I did a bunch of dating. So around December of last year, I was like, all right, let me, you know, see what dating. I'd moved up to the Bay Area. I'm like, let me see what the men up here are all about. And I went through like a couple dating cycles, like I was describing my like dating funnels. And, you know, I met a couple of really great people. There were a couple of people I went on like 4 or 5 dates with. But again, because I love my life so much and it's great as is, someone has to be like extraordinary for me to want to add them to my life, you know?
Yep.
And so again, like I love having lovers here and there because I'm like the physical aspect is great. And I'm a very sensual and sexual person. And I do like to have that in my life, but I'm also not in, I don't do anything casually. So it takes a certain kind of person to be like my lover because I'm not going to just do this, like whatever people call it. So booty calls. That's what I'm not into. different context, but one of my teachers, Desiree Attaway, says you want your relationships to be transformational, not transactional. Mm. And I apply that to everything. And so, you know, a lot of people, you know, on dating apps and who do things casually, like they're just looking for the transaction and I'm not a transaction person. Yeah. So that was interesting. There was someone I was hanging out with for a little while. And then once I realized I was going to be moving to Miami, I was like, okay, no point there. But I did though, before I came to Miami, I decided to turn a dating app on here just to see what the men were like here. And I met this really amazing man who ended up being a realtor, who ended up helping me find my apartment. And
that's helpful.
super helpful. And so, and we went on some dates and we were like getting close and really like getting to know each other and stuff. But once I got here, it just became clear to me that he wasn't necessarily available for what I wanted, but we really did get quite close. So we're friends, but, yeah. So, I mean, I've kind of just like, I answered the question by way of just like telling you what I did because it was fascinating.
That's great.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's just, but what's really interesting was the difference between like the Bay Area and California and then Miami, like two absolutely different political climates, social climates, culturally quite different. And just seeing how people in dating and otherwise were so different in the two different places was another whole interesting thing.
Oh yeah. I mean, we could do like a whole few hours just talking about that, especially in the times that we are living in right now. It's a huge, huge difference.
Oh my God.
I really like how you talk about being comfortable and content and happy and thriving in your life, how that affects the way you approach the people that you let into it, that somebody has to be able to enhance it. You know, I hate all of these dating coaches and dating people who are like 6 weeks to finding your soulmate or whatever it is. And first you have to discover yourself and you have to all do this. And then at the end, you are going to find your person. And that's like the carrot that they dangle. It's like, okay, wait a minute. What if we just focus on how we get to a point where we're actually content in our life. And so we truly believe with each date we go into that it's not like, oh my God, this has to work. But instead, if it doesn't work, it's okay. And if it does work, it has to like really work because I'm already in a really good situation. That is such a powerful place to be.
Yeah. One thing I like to think about it is that like my life is like this awesome adventure. And somebody, I want to find someone whose life is also an awesome adventure. And then like our forces combined is another, it just becomes an incredibly expansive, beautiful adventure, you know?
Yeah. That's so cool. That's so cool. Well, you just mentioned that you moved from the Bay Area to Miami, a huge move, cross-country move done by yourself. I mean, the challenges of moving, oh my God, moving is like so stressful, but to do it on your own, you know, a lot of single women really struggle to make changes in their lives because they don't necessarily, they don't know if they can do it by themselves, or we're told as society, like, oh, these are all things that you do not by yourself if you're a woman. No. What was the move like for you?
Oh my God, it was a nightmare. You know, and I've moved so much by myself, like doing shit by my, there's a saying, like, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
Yeah.
And so I'm good at fast. I'm good at pivots like doing big stuff on my own, because again, it's easy because I make all the decisions. I call all the shots. But at the point at which I was moving, I was just burned out from the pandemic, from living on my own. I really was not doing well in the Bay Area. And, you know, I was tired, and I probably should have asked other people to like help me find the movers or whatever. So the movers, that whole situation in and of itself was awful. And then transitioning, getting here, like you said, it was just really stressful. And then the rental market in Miami was bananas. A lot of people are moving here. And so it took me, when I got here, I didn't have an apartment yet. And so my stuff came, and luckily I had friends who had rented a place that they weren't moving into yet. So my friends had an empty house, and they were like, stay in our house. So I literally stored myself and my stuff in my friend's house for my first month here. Which, that's not what I wanted, you know? So I just, it was like thing after thing of like not being what I wanted, you know? And so that was, it was very challenging. I actually only just this past week started to feel grounded here after 2 months, which I did get into an apartment. I love my apartment. I love my neighborhood. It's a great spot. But just acclimating and also dealing with everything I had just been through was a whole challenge in and of itself.
Well, and isn't that important too, instead of just being like, I moved to Miami and everything is great and I love my life and it's perfect and wonderful. And, you know, it's okay to do big things, even small things that don't quite go the way you thought and are really hard and have really tough moments that you didn't expect or plan. Like that happens. That's life. It doesn't mean you failed. It just means that this is what happened.
Yeah. And, you know, and I shared actually on Instagram and in other places in my membership, I was kind of sharing with people, you know, how awful it was going.
Yeah.
And I was sharing that on purpose to be like, hey, y'all, listen, I'm not manifesting this. I'm not attracting this. This is just hard.
Yeah.
Some things are just hard. So through it, what I'm doing is loving myself and being gentle with myself. I'm not beating myself. I'm not being like, why is this happening to me? I'm being like, damn. All right. Well, if this is happening, I really need to use my tools so I could get through. This will not last forever. I won't feel this shitty forever. This won't be this hard forever. But while it is, how can I be as kind as possible to myself? How can I take care of myself? Where do I need to ask for support? Where is support available to me? Really stretching my receptivity, my willingness to ask for support, identify even what my friggin' needs are. And also even in my business, I had to move a lot of stuff, cancel some things. I stretched a program out for an extra month because I was like, y'all, I just don't have it in me in July. This move is so much harder than I thought it was going to be. And, you know, whenever I do stuff like that, I always get big thank yous from people. People are never disappointed. They're never upset. They're never like, you promised this. You should be sucking it up, because that's not what I teach.
Yeah.
I teach embodiment, and I'm like, here's what's going on with me. Here's how I feel. Here's what I need to do instead. Thank you so much for rolling with me. If you're upset, I get it. And this is still how it is. Yeah. I'm a small business, but above that, I'm a human being, and I'm a solo human being. So no one out here is taking care of me. I got to do both, run this business and take care of myself. And I'm going to do both to the best of my ability, even if it's not up to somebody else's standards in this moment. And then, you know, we'll get back into a better flow. I'll be feeling better at some point. And we'll rejoice when we get there, but that's not this phase.
Yes. And I think it's so important too. I think something that gets really lost in the whole self-help world is this idea that you do all of this work and then your life is better and everything is great and you just move on in this positive, happy, wonderful vibe direction. Like the point of your work, the point of the work that I try and do as well is, yes, we all want to be in a good place. We all want to be living a better life and knowing ourselves better and understanding it better. But it's never going to be perfect constantly. Like that just doesn't exist. We do this work so we have the tools to help ourselves more so in the difficult times than in these times that we think we're supposed to live in that are just perfect all the time. It's just not realistic.
No. And this goes to, you know, we've been talking about relationships and also this goes to relationships with ourselves, right?
Yeah.
We're not just here for the good times. We don't just bail on our people, our relationships, not just romantic, but anything, just when there's a rough patch, you work through it. There's no growth without tension or friction or even we need chaos too. So to go through those periods and like you said, use the tools, stretch the edges, figure out, okay, and surrender. And listen, we can take these cues from nature. You know, we have, what is winter? Winter is dark, right? Summer is bright. Spring and fall are the transitional seasons. Life is like that. It's cycles and seasons. Some cycles are beautiful and amazing and abundant and things are flowing and it's easy. Other cycles, you're getting your ass kicked and it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's so unfair to tell ourselves that in order to be healthy and happy, we have to be happy all the time. And everything has to be smooth all the time. And that's how you know you've reached a level of like self-understanding and all of the work has paid off. It's so unfair.
Yeah, that's just not – and it's just like a lie too. Just
it is.
Straight up bold-faced. That's just not how anything works.
Yeah. Oh, God. No, it's not. Elizabeth, I am so appreciative of your honesty and your openness and being able to talk about these things in this way. And just I've loved this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Your energy is so freaking great and you have such good questions. Thank you.
Thank you. I love to hear that. I know people, if they have not connected with you already, are definitely going to want to. So what is the best way to learn more about you, learn more about your work, and potentially even work with you?
Two things. Go to untameyourself.com or go to my Instagram, which is just my name, at Elizabeth D'Alto. Everything lives in the link tree on my Instagram. And I love Instagram. So I'll take a couple breaks throughout the course of the year, but I'm always on there sharing all kinds of stuff. And then the website has everything. The podcast is there. Embodied Living Center, you know, everything, all of our workshops, all the cool things we have going on is on the website.
Fabulous. And I will put links to all of this in the show notes below. So you guys will easily be able to find Elizabeth. And again, thank you so much. This has been an awesome conversation. I'm so honored that you were able to sit down and share all this with me.
Of course. Thank you.